This is Forrest Solis interviewing Kathleen Walsh on August 12th at 2:30. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. So, could you maybe just tell me a little bit about yourself to kind of get us started here?
I grew up in a military family. My dad retired here to Arizona in the early 70s. I have three other siblings, but I have to say that during most of my childhood, I felt like I was an only child because I felt so different from my family and my siblings. And if it wasn't for the resemblance, I really thought I was maybe left on the doorstep. Really, I just felt very different. I felt different in school. And I'm sure that's with a lot of people, but at that time there was no way of socially connecting with other people maybe that felt the same way, so you did feel pretty isolated. And so I was pretty much on my own. I did have friends, but I would never form any really close attachments because of just the kind of the gypsy lifestyle that we led. I never really got to form any close attachments to people because we moved a lot. So that continued on through my early teens and my adulthood. And I when I could, I finally decided that when I could financially, I finally decided I would live on my own. I can't describe to people how comfortable and how good it feels for me to be by myself. Yet, I am human. I do need human contact. And that's the kind of is conundrum a good word? Because that's what comes to mind, that I want to be with people, but I don't. It's like I want to be with people, and when I am, even I do best one-on-one, always have. Never wanted to be in a group of many girlfriends, just wanted to have one girlfriend. I don't know where that comes from. I've just always been that way. So when I was in my early 20s, I was living on my own in Phoenix, which I love. I would love to come back to live in Phoenix. I was with friends casually that were getting married now, and they were mid-20s now. Everybody seemed to be getting married, and I still didn't want that. I had boyfriends. I never wanted to be married. When I was younger, I never dreamed about my wedding dress. I never dreamed about my wedding. Never. I read romance novels, so I mean, I did have a feeling of, being with someone and having that romance, but never wanted to be married. And as I got older into my late 20s, all of a sudden, it was the biological clock just went, off. The alarm was going off in my head like all the time, and I thought, I don't want to be married. And it never occurred to me that it was wrong to have a child and not be married. It was like, I wanted to have a stable job so I could live on my own. I achieved that. I wanted to buy a home on my own. I achieved that. And now I want a child. So I will. And I wasn't thinking, I'm just going to go look for somebody to donate, some man to donate, a sperm donor. I really wanted to be with somebody, but it just, it didn't work out. As far as being married or being, finding someone, getting married, that natural, how that progression works. I had a boyfriend, and it just so happened that over the course of like 2 or 3 months, and I think in the back of my head, that's what I really was looking for, a sperm donor. And I was telling myself, oh no, I really would like to be married. I don't want to, but anyway, I met her dad, and we dated for a little while, and then we split up, and then I found out I was pregnant. And The doctor actually, I didn't seem so excited when, you know, he told me. I already knew that I was. And he said, well, you know, do you want to continue with this? I almost said no. And I said, you know what, let me think about it. I want to think about it. And then a week went by, 2 weeks went by, a month went by. I went, oh, it's too late. I'm just going to go ahead. And once I made that commitment, I never really seemed like it was wrong, like not to be married, and my friends were. And sometimes I was envious of that because they had somebody there for them. But I did try to get back together with her dad, and it did. We lived together after she was born, but it lasted maybe a year. And then I moved out, and she has not seen him since she was 18 months. We have not seen him. I don't even know if he still lives in Phoenix. Haven't had any contact, nothing.
Wow, was it a really difficult breakup?
It was. And I, through the years, struggling. There were good, you know, I had, you know, fairly good, a really good job, and financially, sometimes I was okay, and so financially, sometimes I wasn't. And at those times, I would think, well, I would like to go to court, and you know, and then the thought of having that havoc or whatever back in my life, because I grew up with a lot of yelling and screaming in the house and all of that, and I did not want that for my daughter. I just wanted so much better of a life for her than I had. And if it meant not having a partner, which I began to think was maybe a flaw in me or some kind of failing in me that I just could not mentally handle it, or I don't know. I never thought that at the time, but as I got older and Hannah would ask me about her dad, which didn't happen until she was in her teens, I thought, gosh, maybe I failed. Maybe I should have been married. Maybe I should have had somebody here for her, you know, another parent. And so then I started to feel, you know, a little guilty about it. But when I was so focused on raising her that I never really thought about it until like I was with my girlfriend or whatever. And then we'd get together. Our kids were about the same age, and I, you know, she had a husband, and that was, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like I was looking for that perfect family life, and I would be really envious sometimes. And then other times, I just when I was around it, and then when I wasn't, I was just so focused on taking care of her that I didn't never really thought about having a partner. But then, you know, I was in my 30s, and I wanted to have another child, and I had a boyfriend at the time, and I don't know. I think it's got to be a flaw in me or something. It just doesn't work out. I don't know if it's like I see that I've picked somebody that just isn't up to my caliber. I tend to pick guys who are maybe a little bit, they don't have as good of a job, or I feel like I need to take care of them. And then once I'm realized, oh, I've made the same mistake again, it's time to move on. I got tired of going through that, so I finally decided I'm just done with the boyfriends. I'm done with and by the time I got to my late 30s, I figured I'm done. I'm gonna just have Hannah and concentrate on her, and it was good, but it was just my body going crazy again, like wanting another child. And once I got past that, I was good.
It's really been interesting through this process. We've seen this a lot and heard a lot of women talk about this sense of what an idealized experience is, and then this kind of guilt that comes along with
yes.
not providing that. But oftentimes, you know, what they have provided is this incredible home for their child and being a wonderful role model and No, I mean, yeah. Anna has such a sense of independence, too. I think that that has to have come from you. She's her own person, 100%.
Oh, I know. And it broke my heart when she... I was proud of her, but broke my heart when she... I mean, I wanted her to, but it was that, you know, mixed feeling when she went away to college. And she separated herself from me at that point completely. And I cried about it a lot because she did not want me to come up. I understand it now. And even now thinking about it makes me want to cry. But she was breaking away. She was like, I need to become my own person. I'm not, she would say, you know, the mean things that teenagers say. I'm not your little doll that you can just dress up and make like you. I'm not a carbon copy of you. And now I see it, but then I didn't, you know. And so we had between the age of 13 and maybe 18, it was a really tough time because she was asserting her independence, and she was the most precious thing in the world to me. And I just, the thought of anything bad happening to her, and you know, it was so funny. Never had boyfriends in my teenage years, not till I graduated high school. She had a boyfriend in junior high. She had a boyfriend in high school that was all through high school. And I don't know. She's just, now it's kind of come back around to where she wants me to be there now. But she moved back from Flag and she moved in with me. And after a year, she says, I need my own space. If that was me living with my, that's why I left. I needed my own space. I could not even be in that. Not that her environment was bad. My environment was bad. But, I understand it now, and it's so much better. That apartment she has down there on Grand, that's a great place. I said, it is so funny that you live between 15th Ave and 16th Ave. And when I bought my house, it was on 16th Ave and McDowell near the Coliseum. And I love that neighborhood. I loved Phoenix. I lived in Phoenix 5 years, and then I thought, oh, this isn't a good neighborhood to raise my child. I need to move back to the suburbs. Blah. I just didn't know how much I didn't like it till it, later on when she went to college and I looked around and went, you know, this is okay to raise a child, but this is not for me. I'm glad I did it, but in high school she wasn't even ready to move on. She wanted to be in a more vibrant, more you know, like Phoenix is, that type of community. The suburbs were not for her, and a lot of bad things happened to some of her friends. And one thing that really caused it was a really substantial event in her life, and still causes her a little bit of pain, was one of her best friends, who was her boyfriend for a little bit, dying. And some of her friends were into drugs, not all of them. Some of them, a boy she was with in kindergarten, they grew up together. He got into drugs, and they have now since, he is done with that. He had a band, and now he does acoustic shows with another friend of hers from high school. And they got back together, you know, met, and they played at Grant Street.
Great.
Yeah, so
it's come full circle.
Yeah,
that seems to be a very happy, well-adjusted person. That
yeah,
has a good relationship with her mother.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you were with her father, and those urges of wanting to have a baby, which I'm fully aware of, did you at that point, were you not using protection? I think you just thought, we'll just see what happens.
That's what made me think. I was looking for that to happen. I did not. And I would always use the excuse of, I don't like telling myself this, I don't like taking the birth control and the pills, because they always made me, I don't know, I'd switch on and off to different brands. They always made me feel like not good. So I didn't like him. I certainly didn't want anything inserted inside of me as far as diaphragm, any of those things. It was either going to be birth control or condoms. But no, at that time, no. So I'm pretty sure that's what I was looking for to happen.
It's interesting. Your subconscious seems to play a role, you know,
mm-hmm.
and even postponing, you know, alternatives. you know, to having the continuing with the pregnancy or not, you know, that maybe subconsciously you just really wanted to continue with it.
Yeah, I was afraid that that I actually wouldn't get pregnant. I wasn't afraid of becoming pregnant, so I was afraid that, you know, I don't know, your hormones and just, I didn't realize how much of a control it had over my body and my mind at that time. It just really, you know, like you think you're in love or you're you know, wanting a baby or you're wanting a boyfriend or whatever. It's just so not, your head is not in control of everything. It's so, it was more just a drive for me to, you know, I must get this accomplished, you know, before. I never set a date like, oh, I have to be, you know, a mother by this date, but I'm glad that it didn't happen to me. And I told my daughter this, I was promiscuous after high school. I never had a boyfriend, and I had one after high school, and I used to go out, party. I never really did drugs. I drank, and was very promiscuous. So I'm surprised that it didn't happen before then. I'm surprised I didn't wind up with the much worse. You know, I had a couple, like the mild STDs, which caused me to stop being promiscuous. But when that happened, but I heard all the talk in my teenage years, and girls had boyfriends and all this talk, and I never knew what was, you know, I always felt like the odd person out, like I was never let in this club. And I'm glad, and I've told Hannah this, I'm glad it didn't happen then. I'm glad it didn't happen in my mid-20s, because I was being selfish. I was she said I was a bad girl. I was being a bad girl. I wasn't ready for that, and I wouldn't have been a good parent. So by the time I got to my late 20s, I don't know, things had changed for me. I quit all that pretty much when I was about her age, now when I'm 24, 25. So in the years prior to having her, those 4 or 5 years, I was more grown up and more done with being really selfish.
That's great. That's interesting. So then... can you talk a little bit about your experience with pregnancy?
I thought before I went to the doctor that I might be, but I thought, nah, I've never been up to this point. Why should it happen now? And then I remember I was out, I went to lunch with one of my friends, and I went in the bathroom and I looked and I saw blood and I thought, ah, I'm starting my period. And then there was no more after that. And then I started feeling a little, you know, I just knew something was off. So I said, I got to go to the doctor because I'm pretty sure. And then when he told me, I just, you know, I'm sure a lot of, I just wasn't excited. So you know, like I said, I kept going and going until I was past the point of no return. And then people at work were really, my girlfriend and I at work, we worked in the same office, we were pregnant pretty much at the same time, and they were really, really good about, they gave us a baby shower. And I had a really, the first start of it, just like every, I'm sure a lot of women, was I was sick a lot, staying in just nauseous a lot, and you know, stay home from work a few times, not much, but I worked up until my 9th month, and it was a really good pregnancy. But my 9th month, I was done. I had swelled up. I retained so much water. My average weight was between back then 135, 145. So I was pretty thin. By the time I was in my 9th month, I was almost 200 pounds. My legs were I didn't have ankles. My legs were huge, and I waddled, and it was hot. It was May going into June, and I was miserable. But that was the time I don't know what I thought I was doing. In my sixth and seventh month, I decided I need to sell this house. I really don't want to be here with... I thought that even before then, but I got a realtor, and then I started doing just little things, thinking I was not pregnant. I mowed the yard. I started bleeding. I had to go to the emergency room, and my girlfriend was wanting to... You know, she was really angry at me. She says, you're probably having a miscarriage. And I was just horrified. I'm like, what was I thinking, trying to be out mowing the yard when I was probably like maybe 4 or 5 months pregnant? I'm like, wait a minute, I really start need to take this seriously now and stop, you know, messing around like this. And so I was fine. They sent me home. No more, you know, really strenuous activity. Although I do remember exercising in the early months. I was still exercising then. But I don't know how some women do it today when they're like huge and they're exercising. No, not, I couldn't have done that. But I have to tell you, I did one more stupid thing. The house was on the market and it looked like it was going to be sold. And there was, it was a little 1920s bungalow. I love and I miss that house to this day. And it had an arch over the driveway, and there was like a little crack in the arch. And I was like, you know, the house just doesn't look perfect. And I didn't, you know, it didn't occur to me that I could go ask one of my neighbors or anybody for help. I got a ladder. I put it up there. I was like 8 months now. And I spackled it and I was painting. And when I was done, I looked down and I went, what am I doing up here on this ladder? Am I crazy? So I got back down but then I had friends helped me move. I was lifting stuff to move. I sold the house and I moved into apartment. I was just doing really, although exercise is strenuous, I don't know how some women do that, but I was moving and lifting things and just pretty much right up until, you know, the end. And then the doctor gives you a date, and that date came and went. So I can tell you about what happened after that. They called me in. They said, we're going to have what do they call it, to make you go into labor, because nothing was happening. It was a week and a half had gone by since the predicted date, which was the end of May, and they gave me the Pitocin. And I laid there for I went home every day. I laid there for a few hours every day, listening to women all around me give birth, going, oh, maybe tomorrow. And I could just, you know, I could hear all the sounds you make of giving birth, you know, the natural way. I'd been to birth classes with my girlfriend. I didn't have, you know, probably the only one in there without a man. And, but I'm telling you, it didn't matter to me still. It still didn't matter. And so I went back the next day, put the needle in my arm again, listened to the women all around me giving birth. And then, you know, then like crying, like, come on, I just want this to happen. Because I went through the classes. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this and do this and do this, just like they said. They said, come back tomorrow. Nothing's happened. I had no contractions. I had nothing. And I was as big as a house, miserable because I was so swollen. And I came back the next day, needle in the arm, and finally got to be around 11 o'clock. And I'd been there 2 hours, 3 hours already. And they said, you know, this isn't happening. We're gonna go to C-section. And I was like, good. Because by then I was just so tired and emotionally tired of hearing all the women giving birth but me. So they, you know, and I had no idea what a C-section was because, I mean, I kind of knew, but I didn't know what exactly was involved because I wasn't going to have that. I was going to have natural childbirth. So, you know, and it just happened. Boom, boom, boom. And that day her dad was there. Her dad and my girlfriend were there. And they put the needle in my needle in. And, I mean, it happened so fast. Around noon, they said, we're going to C-section. And she was born at 1:25. So it was fast. I mean, wheel me in. I mean, everything went numb. Wheel me in, and they let her dad stay in there. And I just remember smelling burning flesh and going, I'm going to throw up. Give me something. And I kept saying, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up. And they finally said, give her more, whatever it was, anti-nausea medication, because I did not want to barf on myself, or because that's I didn't know they would give you anything. I thought I was just going to barf on myself. And I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up. And I kept saying that. And finally, they gave me something, and I felt a little bit better. And it seemed just that smell, because he used a laser. And they didn't go up and down like most. They did the bikini one where they give you but the laser was I thought they were going to cut me. He used a laser, and that was the burning flesh smell that was making me sick. And it just seemed to like go really fast. And pretty soon they reach up and they like pushed. I remember her head popped out, or so they say. They get, I couldn't see, and she just kind of went like a cry, why are you doing this? Put me back, It was like kind of a cry, and then then she came out, and then she really started crying, and then it was. It was just me and another lady in the hospital, and it was somebody that I had gone through the birth class with. And the first night, I must have hit the button for meds a million times. I was in such pain, and they didn't bring her to me until the next day, and I didn't want her. Take her away. I'm in pain. Take her away. But they got you up right away. They made me take a shower. They made me walk, which I could barely do. And they brought her to me to start nursing. But I'm telling you, the first couple of days, I didn't want her. And then, because I was just so, like, out of it. And then by the end of the second day, I heard her crying in the nurse's. She was in the little container and at the nurse's station or wherever they had her. And so I went to find her because, it was just the crying was like, oh my God, that's my baby. I was like kind of coming out of it. And so I kind of walked down till I found somebody. I said, could you bring her in now? And I had a really hard time nursing and a hard time, I don't know. I kind of knew what to do automatically. But then again, I was like just having the C-section. I didn't realize what major surgery that was. I didn't know. I just thought, oh, it's just simple. And I was in a lot of pain. But by the third day, I was good. And then they actually let me stay a fourth. They wanted to kick me out after the third, but the doctor said I could stay a fourth. By the fourth day, I was doing pretty good. It was really nice. They, I almost said the husband. My boyfriend came to see me, and they brought us a nice dinner, and we had champagne, and it was really nice. It was a really nice experience. I mean, I didn't like ask for any upgraded services or anything. It was just something that they did back then. They asked if you wanted it. I'm like, sure, yeah, that sounds good. Make me feel better. And when I left the hospital, I had to sit in a wheelchair. I did not want to leave with her. I didn't want to take her out into that world. I did not. I was like, oh, no, she's so clean and beautiful. I do not want to leave this hospital. I want to just raise her here. It was just like crazy thoughts going through your head. And I just thought the world outside was just so dirty and nasty. And I didn't want her to touch her, But, yeah, it was really quick for having to wait those days. Expecting that would happen, and just it was a whole different thing. But it was kind of a blur, actually. It just went so fast.
Do you remember the hospital room?
Yeah. It was nice because I was by myself, and there were not a lot of people there that day. Her and the other little boy were the only two born within that 3-day span that I recall that were there. Yeah,
I mean the actual delivery room.
Oh, it was a I was in an operating room.
So was your boyfriend at the time videotaping, or did you have a mirror?
No, I didn't get to see anything, and he took my only one person could be in there, so he took the pictures, which are okay. I had pictures of them holding her up with the umbilical cord still attached. And her on the warming table, But nothing, you know, her emerging, anything like that. We didn't have a video camera. And another thing I never got was my ultrasounds. I didn't know you could. And they never offered back then. They never offered them. You'd had to ask. And it didn't occur to me till after she was born. They said, oh, did you get the ultrasounds? Some of my friends said, no. Well, go back. And they couldn't find them or whatever. So I never got those. But yeah, you had to ask back then. It was not anything like today where it's like 3D and they offer them to, or they automatically give them to you. But yeah, it was an operating room, and there were two obstetricians. He had somebody else working with him, and I think two nurses, and then the anesthesiologist and my boyfriend. So yeah, and my family came down later, but they're strange. It wasn't like a, you know, like, oh, she had a baby. Oh, okay, let's go home. You know, it wasn't like a big deal for them.
Were they really involved afterward at all?
Yes, actually, yes. My parents surprisingly were. They said, you know, what do you want to do when you go back to work? And I said, I'm just going to hire somebody to come in and watch her. And I was living still in Phoenix, but I had sold my house, and I wasn't going to buy another. I just didn't want to do that at the time. And I was living in an apartment, and they said, well, we're going to move to Phoenix to the same apartments, because they were retired and they were living in actually had just sold their house and were kind of nomads or whatever, gypsies, and living in an apartment. And they said, well, we'll move to Phoenix and we'll take care of her for you. So I was working nights. I was working 11 o'clock at night to 8 in the morning, and they would only watch her. I would come home and I would, they would watch her from when I got home till about 11 o'clock or noon, and then they would bring her back to me. So I was only getting like 4 or 5 hours of sleep. I was so tired. But they really helped me save money, and I felt that they were, or she was, safe with them, even though I don't think they did so hot taking care of me, but I just felt she was safer with them. So, I mean, they took care of me okay. It was the atmosphere, it was a long time ago, and people treated or raised kids differently then. It was a lot different. So, I was more attentive to her. And what I tell people when I tell Hannah anyway, and I've told a couple of my girlfriends this, that is I wanted to raise her like I wanted to be raised, you know. So I guess I use that as a I use that as a kind of a guideline to taking care of her. But I don't know. I had fun doing. It's not necessarily things that things that were around when I was a child. But like I enrolled her in just like Gymboree or, you know, things like that. And it's so funny because even then she had a personality where she wouldn't join in with the other kids. She would go like they were doing a song in a circle, and I could never get her to join in. She always wanted to be off on her own. She was independent even then. So yeah, helped me out with her quite a bit. So that was their gift to me. I mean, I never had a good relationship. It was just a very strained relationship because I didn't want to be part of the family. I wanted to move as soon as I graduated from high school. I wanted to get away because I wanted some peace and quiet and to not have, because I knew all of that was wrong, like, you know, shaming kids or hitting kids, or I knew all that was wrong. Even when I was a little kid, I knew that was wrong. So I wanted to get away from that, and I never did that with Hannah. She was only one time in the whole time she was growing up. We were in Toys R Us, and she was tired, and it was back in those days, you could play on the equipment they had set up, and she was having a blast in one of the little houses. It's time to go. We got to go home now. no, I don't want to go. And I put her in the cart. And it's the only time I've seen her throw a fit. She's like shaking the cart. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And I leaned really close to her. I said, stop. And I leaned really close to her. I said, if you don't stop this now, you're not getting anything for your birthday. And she was really, she was like looking at me like, what? Like, did my mom just say that to me? She was only like maybe four or five. I said, stop it. You know, I did it through clenched teeth, like, stop it now, you know, because people were looking and I didn't want that. But I never hit her, but I was really mean when I hissed that in her ear. But no, it was a, she was a blast to raise. I had so much fun. So much fun. She was like a little adult, and I would talk to her like an adult, and we just had the best time. But yeah, all those pictures I look at, and I look at her now, I'm like, stop growing up. You know, I'm proud of her at the same time, but I miss those days. It was good times.
That's really wonderful. I think, I would just love it if I only had to hiss something like that into my son's ear to get him to stop doing stuff.
How many children do you have?
One.
Oh, okay.
It's just going to stay there.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, if I'd had that second one, it might have been a different story. I don't think I had the patience. I really don't think so.
Or else he just knows that we're always bluffing. But, so, no, it's great. I think that's a really remarkable story, and you're a good talker, which is good.
Oh, I don't mean to be. I hope I'm not going off the subject.
Great. No,
okay.
That's great. So we're categorizing these stories into themes.
Okay.
And asking women to come up with maybe a word that encompasses their experience.
The birth, or just her having
however
her.
You.
Oh my gosh.
It's a challenge.
This word is used a lot, but I'm life-changing. Just life-changing. There's lots of other words. I don't want to use. I'm going to use life-changing because all the other words are overused. It was amazing before. Amazing was a really used a word, but it for me. Life-changing because I really liked being a child because just of the new experiences, but it's different when you get to experience it through your child's eyes. So, oh God, it was just her fascination with we were members of the zoo. We'd go to the zoo all the time. Just her fascination with the animals, or seeing, or maybe when she was younger, being able to point things out and being like you're amazing, Mom. Wow, it sure beats that later on in the teen years. God, you're so stupid. Don't you know anything? Don't you know how to use a computer? No, and I still have trouble. The games were coming out, and her and I would try the games. She goes, just forget it. I'm just going to do it. You don't know how to do it. I'm like, you're right, I don't. I need you to teach me. I don't have time for that. I don't have time. Why can't you play? Because I can't, Hannah. So for a while, it was hard to go from being the hero to like, oh, God, you're so dumb. Don't you know anything? I'm glad that's over with. That was hard. That was really hard.
I can only imagine.
Oh, gosh. It was hard being the somebody's got to be. I mean, if like maybe if there's both parents, there's like one has to be good cop, one's bad cop. I had to be both. It sucked. But it didn't really bother me until it did off and on when I would think of going to, you know, I went to lawyers like two or three different times and paid them to sit there and be told that, you know, if you get money from him, he's going to have to see her. And I said, no, forget it. Unless you're going to guarantee me thousands a month, which I know that will never happen, no. And I'd get up and leave, and then I'd feel bad that it didn't work out or she didn't have another parent. But it kind of hit me when she went to NAU and one of her professors kind of became like a, for to her, a like a surrogate father figure. So, and then she would started talking to me about her dad, and I said, you know, he probably still lives in Phoenix. You can look him up if you want. I said, it's up to you. I said, personally, not a good person, but I have a different relationship with him than he's your biological father. He never was around, so he's not really, you know, what I would never really badmouth him. I mean, like really bad, but I would say, you know, he wasn't around. And personally, I think he's a horrible person. What I found out after living with him for a while, not a good person. But it's so funny, the videos that I have from back then are him playing with her. You know, she would ask him always to he would pick her up and flip her around. You know, she was about a year old before we split up. And so, like, it on the surface, it looks like a good thing, but it was not a good person. He was not a good person. And I just have a feeling that his negativity and just some of the things that I found, he told me about himself, like he had, like it seemed like he had some, just some serious mental problems just from him, you know, growing up the way he did, and more so than I ever felt I had. So anyway, she chose not to look him up. But, you know, I said, you know, he, once in a while we're driving down, he used to live over by Encanto Park, and we'll be driving that way, and I said, you know, he used to live over here if you want to go. She says, nah, no, that's okay, I'm good. I just think after all, now 25 or 24 years, it would be like, what's the point? I mean, I don't know, he has never reached out to try and contact her, ever offered anything, ever. So he was just praying that I would go away and not. He told me one of the things that I thought was, you know, part of the bigger picture of him being just an overall bad person was, if you ever try to get a penny out of me, I'll make your life miserable. So I went, bye. I will never, ever, ever cross your path again. And I hope to God you don't cross. And he didn't. I never heard from him again.
That always amazes me.
Yeah.
Then he
yeah.
knows his complete name so she can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, her name was his last name. I had it changed. When she was about, well, after we split up, she was almost two. I went to court and had it changed to mine. I figured, why not? Why not? It bothered me that we wouldn't have the same name. You know what I mean? If I was going to raise her, it wasn't like a ego thing or anything like that. It was just, it's just better if we have the same last name. Just better, you know? So, yeah, I even changed her middle name, too, because her middle name was his aunt's middle name. I mean, his aunt's first name. And I just... Hannah was my choice, and the middle name was his. Of course, she had his last name because he signed the birth certificate. I just, yeah, I'm just going to change anything related to him. So, yeah, in fact, I heard from his mother quite a bit because I had met her when Hannah was little, and she lived out of state. She kept trying to contact me, and I wouldn't contact her back after we split up because I didn't want him to know anything about... I felt like he didn't deserve to know anything about her. And, you know... when I was talking to somebody one day about, you know, how I kind of felt bad and about him not being in her life or whatever, and something to that effect, and they said, you know, he's the one who missed out. He missed everything. Everything. And him trying to say that it's not his child, oh my God. She looked so much like him when she was born. Well, her bone structure, the cheeks and her ears stick out like his ears, and she has the spacing of her eyes. His were wide, mine are more closer together, and did look a lot. When she was first born, I have pictures of myself when I was first born, and we look exactly like, but over when she got a little bit older, she looked, oh my God, she looked so much like him, and now it doesn't seem to be so much the case, but no, she has no desire to contact him. Oh, that's me. That's okay. Sorry. Sorry.
Thought,
sorry.
What is going on here? No, that's interesting, to say the least. Oh, my goodness. Well, is there anything that you'd feel like we'd missed?
No, I think I've told you
the ins and outs.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't. I thought it would be kind of hard to get started, but the questions.
No, it was great.
Help.
It was great.
Help.
And we'll get. It'll become to a really good story, I think. Oh. I'm going to go ahead and hit.